Well, I said we'll call the meeting of the Health and Human Services Finance Committee to order. This morning, our business is to review additional capital investment requests, and just reminding members that it will be the obligation of this committee to present to the Capital Investment Committee a ranking order of our recommendations on the all of the bonding requests that we received, both from the governor's request and the additional ones that we have heard, including those we've heard going to hear today. We will not be doing a kind of a move bills for approval. Basically, we'll move the bills. They will then remain in the domain of the committee. And then as we present our sort of our letter of recommendation, those will be folded in, but the bills will just stay with the committee. With that, we'll begin with our first one. Representative Nornes, I think you have House File 1521. Would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1521.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. And you had an amendment, I believe, to bring the bill into the form that the author would wish to...
I do have an amendment, H-152-1A1.
Representative Nornes moves amendment A1. And members, this is just, to bring the numbers that were in the bill up to date with the most current numbers. Is that correct, Representative Nornes?
That's correct. The bill was introduced in last session, 2003, and so the amendment just updates the requests. In most cases, inflation caused those numbers to go up a little bit. I think the only exception to that would be the Fergus Falls project, where actually it went down. And so we're working at it.
Do we have a quorum? I think we do now, don't we? Quorum? Okay, we have a quorum, so we can act on the amendment. Members understand the amendment? Amendment is A1. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair,
Representative, you have your bill in your shape. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. I'd like to acknowledge first in the audience today, the administrator of the Fergus Falls Veterans Home, John Skillingstead, is here, and there are a number of other veterans also this morning here to either take part or at least watch and follow the proceedings. House File 1521 encompasses several projects around the state of Minnesota, Fergus Falls being one of them. And to kind of give an overview of those projects this morning, we have Stephen Musser, Executive Director of the Minnesota Veterans Board, with us. And I'll turn the proceedings over to him now.
Musser, welcome to the committee. If you'd please reintroduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Steve Musser. I'm the Executive Director of the Veterans Homes Board. We did make a copy of a PowerPoint presentation available to all the members, and hopefully you have that, because I will be walking through that this morning. For the sake of time, I didn't bring my computer, and I won't throw it up on the screen, but hopefully we can walk through the slides. We do have a couple members from service organizations who are behind me who... if time permits, would like to make a couple comments of support. Al Lair from the VFW and Roger Ball from the American Legion, and hopefully we can ask them to make comments when I'm finished. As we go through the PowerPoint presentation, the second slide titled Project Development really is there to let you know that we've gone through a fair amount of study to review the demand data for aging veterans in the state of Minnesota. There are 428,000 veterans in the state, and although in general the veteran population is decreasing, the veterans that we care for, typically age 65 years of age and older, that population is going to be growing slightly over time, especially through the year 2025. And in fact, as we get into 2025, we start to see the impact of the Vietnam veteran, whose average age will be about 75, and more than likely will need care in veterans' homes. The Veterans Homes Board has five goals for all of our projects. First of all, we think we want to be good stewards and take care of what we have. Secondly, diagnosis of Alzheimer's and dementia is our number one diagnosis throughout the state at each of our long-term care facilities, and our goal is to develop special care units for the treatment of Alzheimer's. Thirdly, we want to develop initiatives that deal with our growing waiting lists at our facilities. Fourthly, we want to bring our facilities up to today's current long-term care construction standards. And fifth, look for alternative funding mechanisms, and in this particular case, to leverage federal funds. The next slide, which is a summary of all of our bonding proposals, is in priority order, and the last five slides are last five projects are included in this bill, and in fact, all have been submitted to the federal VA for a 65% match of federal funds. The VA has approved tentatively these projects, and will provide funding once the state makes their commitment. Our first and second priority is sort of an emergency drain pipe replacement at Minneapolis and asset preservation, which is a summary of all the deferred maintenance around the state we won't talk about today and are not included in this bill. But our third priority is, and that's the establishment of adult daycare at the Minneapolis campus. The seventh slide in this package identifies Building 4, which is a historic building on campus. This building, the exterior envelope has been renovated, windows replaced, and the roof has been replaced, but the interior needs renovation for this particular program. As we look at long-term care development on this campus, as I said, one of our goals is to develop a continuum of care, and that begins with adult daycare. Providing adult daycare on this campus, we believe, will have a positive impact on our waiting list and allow veterans to remain in their homes longer. We propose an operation of 5 to 6 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day, serving approximately 35 to 40 clients. One of the good features of this program is that the federal VA now provides per diems of up to 50%, up to $74 a day, and that makes this far more affordable for veterans who come to us for this service. The veteran or family will pay the difference, but we still believe that this will be far more affordable than if they had to pay the full fare. In addition, because we get VA per diem, so one of the VA requirements is that we provide transportation for adult daycare veterans in our program, and we will be doing that. So this program is self-supporting, and we believe is the right thing to do to begin the continuum of care at this campus. The next project is a Silver Bay upgrade. Silver Bay is an old school that was built in 1953, and this project does a number of things. We've just recently been cited by the fire marshal, for example, because of some storage and some safety issues. This will correct that problem. We have some significant space and use problems. And what we did with this is we took the current VA construction standards, we took the current state construction standards, and we compared them against what we have. And to the extent we could, we tried to kind of fix some of the things that we could in trying to convert an old school to a nursing home. Two other things we did. One is that up in Lake County, they did a gaps analysis in the last 2 years and identified that adult daycare and child daycare were significant shortages. And we are also proposing to begin a small adult daycare program with this construction. Again, as we discussed at Minneapolis, this will be a self-supporting program. And then we also propose child daycare. Recruiting and retention of healthcare professionals in the Silver Bay area is very difficult. It also is a very large shortage of services in the area, and we believe that we can provide this service up there with a preference to our employees and then make it available to the rest of the population.
Excuse me, Mr. Musper, just to be sure that we're tracking to the right numbers, The number that's on your chart is the same that was in the project funding summary that was we reviewed when we were reviewing the governor's rec, but the amendment now that we've done has a different number. So I'm assuming that the right number as we carry this forward would be the number that was in the amendment. Am I correct with that, Mr. Musser?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
That's correct. The next project, Mr. Chairman, is our Alzheimer's edition at our Laverne facility. Again, one of our goals is to provide the right therapeutic environment for the care of Alzheimer's patients. Currently, our patients are, we have 18 patients on a wing at Laverne. The space is pretty crowded. These patients not only do all of their activities in this area, but they dine in this area. It is a secure area as well, and what we are proposing for this is very similar to what we have at our Silver Bay facility. And we have a slide there that both shows some of the crowding with the wheelchairs and Jerry chairs and it does create really a very significant safety issue. And then the next slide really talks about what we would like to build. Again, this is our Silver Bay facility, but it provides a activity room where folks can wander. There's a walking path around the exterior of the room that has soft corners that directs patients as they do walk. The interior, the inside of the room is for dining and activities. It has a small kitchenette for meals. Aromatherapy, for example, is a big part of some of the treatment modalities, and just simple things like baking chocolate chip cookies and the smells that one gets from that is really important and part of that project. So this addition helps develop the appropriate therapeutic environment for our Alzheimer's patients, and we have that as our...
Excuse me, Mr. Musser. Representative Magnus is here, and I believe this is a bill that you had separately. Would you like to add any additional comments to this now, or would you want to do it after? Please come forward if you'd like to. And members, I'll just sort of acknowledge that... And we also have House File 2306 that would deal specifically with this project, but I think it's the same project and everything would be the same. But if you, I'm sorry. Yeah, why don't you just pull up with them? There you go. That works for me. And Representative Magnus, would you like to add anything to Mr. Musser's testimony on the Laverne project?
Oh, wait, right.
Okay, excellent. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, the next project is a dining room kitchen renovation at our Minneapolis facility. This kitchen was built in 1979, has had some minor upgrades over time, but really we have a significant amount of outdated equipment. The physical layout for the safety and workflow is poor. It does not meet the National Sanitation Foundation equipment standards. We have some issues with the ductwork and hoods. And so this project upgrades all of those things. In addition, you know, when this kitchen and dining room area were built, probably 25% of our patients were in wheelchairs. Today, upwards to 70-75% are in wheelchairs and have some sort of assistive devices. The project includes replacing the serving area and the dining room, which really lends itself to the change in our patient population this time. In addition, it does expand the dining room area a little bit. We do not have areas where families can have private meals with their loved ones, and this allows a room for that. We also don't have any place for our employees to eat, and we have a small area that's included in this for the employees, And finally, it does expand our loading dock and storage areas. Right now, we have to have frequent deliveries of food, and this will allow us to purchase in greater quantities. And then the last project is our Fergus Falls project. It is a 21-bed addition for Alzheimer's. Fergus Falls over the last two or three years has had a constantly growing waiting list, and so this project really accomplishes two of our board's goals. One is to help deal with the waiting list, and secondly, it is to help properly take care of our Alzheimer's and dementia population. We're proposing to build an addition of 21 beds, 4 semi-private rooms, 9 private rooms, and 2 semi-private rooms that can be used as respite beds and swing space for our skilled patients. In addition, we have the USVA's community-based outpatient clinic housed at our facility. We've sandwiched that into existing space, and we're proposing to add a small wing for their clinic that we will lease the space out to them. So all five of these projects really meet our board's goals of meeting the increasing demand, providing special care units for our Alzheimer's and dementia patients, improve the quality of life for all of our residents, and really to leverage federal funds to complete the construction. Let me just make a comment about the federal funding. I was in Washington yesterday and met with our VA state home grant folks, and one of the questions I get asked, well, can you guarantee that we'll get federal funding if the state makes its commitment? I learned yesterday that at this point in time there are more funds available than they have grant applications, and so the probability of our projects being approved is high, while I can't give you 100% guarantee, we think the chances are really pretty good.
Mr. Mosford, to that point, if I heard you right, it's a flat percent, was it 65%? Is the flat percent, or is that vary by project?
Mr. Chairman, it is a flat 65% for each project application that we've submitted.
Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Musser, just a request. I may have, because I visited the Veterans Home, a detail, but I think it'd be helpful if members had a little more detail on each of the projects, kind of a breakdown of the expenses, so if we can sort of collectively between our committee administrator and you make sure that we get that, and we'll get that to our members.
Yes, sir. We certainly.
Thank you very much. And I do want to proceed. You had said you had some other people to testify as well, so I don't want to forget that. But Representative Magnus, if you'd like to make comment, please do now.
No. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you for allowing us to present the bills this morning. I have a standalone bill, House File 2306, Mr. Chairman, to deal solely with the Laverne home, dementia ward there.
Let me suggest, to make this proper, then the chair will lay over House File 1521 for future consideration so we can close our business on that.
Right.
And then the chair will move House File 2306. And Representative Magnus, I'm assuming you did not have any amendments for that bill?
No, I do not, Mr. Chairman.
That places it before us.
Thank you. Straightforward bill. Mr. Hauser has given a good analysis of the projects before you concerning veterans, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The Laverne situation is a bonding request for a little over $280,000 to redo the dementia unit in Laverne's veterans home. Laverne's veterans home is a wonderful home, super place with great a great facility and excellent workers there, excellent care. But the problem we're facing there is a dementia unit, and I don't think any of us knew at that time the challenges that Alzheimer and dementia would bring forth to us in such a rapid pace, and the strain we have on the facility to handle that. Even though, as I said, we have excellent care and a good facility, it's just not set up to handle the Alzheimer requirements there that we need. As the technology and the studies for that disease give us more information on the best ways to handle it, we need to update the facility. And Mr. Chairman, we have currently over 400,000 veterans in Minnesota, including myself, and we have fellow veterans here to testify this morning. But I think Minnesota certainly can't forget our veterans. I don't know how how the best way to proceed for us is, but we can't forget them in their hour of need when we ask them for their help in our hour of need, in our country's hour of need. So, Mr. Chairman and the committee members, I know you have a tough task in front of you. I know the money is tight yet, but I'm asking that you do support the veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think maybe before we proceed, although we can certainly continue the discussion, just so that we properly conclude it, the chair will lay over House File 2306 for future consideration. Mr. Musby, just on the Laverne facility, we've had a history of making some fixes to it because of mold problems. How are we doing in terms of the base facility itself and those problems?
Mr. Chairman, the difficulties that we had with mold have been remediated. We found that the design and the construction were faulty. We did file a lawsuit against both the architects and the construction company and prevailed with the architects and were able to recover a small amount from the construction company. I think one of the interesting things that I learned yesterday with the State Home Grant Program is that we do have the ability to submit these projects to the VA for the potential of getting retroactive funding for them. And it's my intent to, before August or before April the 15th, is to do just that, is to see if we can recover some additional federal dollars for this project.
Thank
but
you.
Yeah, it's been fixed.
You had some other test cards. Before we do, though, just a moment of business here. Representative Boudreau, would you be willing to move the minutes of our Thursday, February 19th meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Mr. Musser, if we have additional people who would like to testify, now would be the time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chairman, I just for the record, I did also provide a little handout on Laverne, which hopefully is made part of your documents, but it does add a little more information about the disease of Alzheimer's, the wandering, and the agitation that our patients have in tight quarters.
Mr. Musser, it is in our pack that we got. So.
And I'll just leave it at that. If anybody has any questions, I'll certainly be happy to answer.
I think, and I'd like to make sure that your testifiers have a chance. I'd like to come back after we do that and maybe discuss some of these things to make sure the committee properly understands.
Yes, sir.
Please introduce yourself for the record if you'd like to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Al Lair. I reside at 910 Corey Lane, St. Cloud, Minnesota. I presently serve as the state commander as the legislative chair for our organization of close to 100,000 members of the organization and Ladies Auxiliary. We've spent an extensive time in the past year reviewing the proposal by the Veterans Home Board and Executive Director, Mr. Musser, and discussed it thoroughly and, of course, recognizing the fact that there is a money pinch. We understand that as well and accept that. But we wanted to be sure that the committee understood that the Veterans of Foreign Wars in Minnesota are totally in support of the proposed bonding requests of the Minnesota Veterans Home Board. That's it for me.
Thank you, Mr. Lehrer. And thank you for coming today. Is there anybody else that wishes to testify? Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Roger Ball. I am the Department Legislative Chairman for the American Legion, which is 113,000 members in the state of Minnesota. As we all know, with modern medicine, we are living longer, and in most cases, that's not very fortunate for a lot of people who cannot afford to stay in their homes. We have 430,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. And as we live longer, our care becomes more apparent that we need the care for the homes. The American Legion Minnesota is 100% behind the bonding issues for the homes. If I owned a building and somebody was going to give me $2 for every $1 I spent on my building, I would certainly accept it gratefully. And this is what the federal government is offering the state of Minnesota with their veterans' homes. I travel quite a bit with the American Legion throughout the United States, and every place I go, all I hear is about the great veterans' homes that we have in the state of Minnesota. We'll be going to Washington, D.C. next week for our legislative conference for the American Legion. We'll be talking to all of our representatives from Minnesota on the Hill, and this is one of the projects that we will be talking to them about. What a great veterans' home we have here. They all know it, but we'll be telling them that we're looking for some help on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify?
Mr. Chairman, John Skillingstad is our administrator at our Fergus Falls facility, and just has some additional comments.
Sure.
Yes, thank you, Steve, and welcome, Mr. Chair, and committees. First of all, the Veterans Home started in 1997 and were an 85-bed facility, and have since, very early on to the inception, had issues with being able to meet the needs of our veterans. We have a waiting list that has topped over 80 at times. Currently, I believe it's 51 on our active and 190 on our inactive list. Active means they want to come in as soon as possible. Inactive means in sometime in the future they'd be interested in coming in. And so we've been unable to meet the needs of the veterans in any timely fashion. It takes 6 to 8 months for veterans to come into our home. When somebody needs long-term care, usually it's an acute event that occurs. They break a hip, there's some immediate need, and we're not able to in any fast fashion deal with those needs of the demand. And so one of the reasons for the addition of the special care unit at Fergus Falls is to meet that demand. Secondly, our Alzheimer's population, which is 59% of the people in our building, is integrated into our operation. That is, it's not a separate unit, and though you can function like that, that is not the best setting for people that have that disease. There's usually inherent conflicts between residents that are cognizant and residents that are confused, and the confused residents will wander into a cognizant resident's room and rifle through their clothing, and conflicts come out of that. We're able to deal with that through some innovations in our facility, but it is not the best and the most proper setting. And through the special care unit, we think we can meet those needs in a better fashion by designing wandering paths and the things that are called fiddle stations to keep our residents that are confused busy, and using innovations such as lights when also the residents have something called sundowners, which means that they become more behaviorally active and dangerous when the sun goes down, and by use of certain lights and the sounds of crickets and those sorts of things, you're able to reestablish correct sleeping patterns. You're able to affect their moods by use of some of those devices. So all of those things would be integrated into this system, as well as things that would key residents about the use of certain areas. If you go to our facility currently, we have something called the Old Town Main Street in our facility, which is you walk through it and it's you have a general store and you have a family room and you have our clinic on the main street. In this special care unit, we would be developing a special models where residents would walk along and see the outside treatment of their room as if it was a house. I live in a brick house. I live in a house with the clapboards. It helps them identify areas that they need to go into and helps them keep as much in touch with their situational reality as possible by the design of the facility. So these are the kind of things that we would like to do for our populations. We're a very innovative facility. We've done a lot of things that are leading edge in the industry, and this is one more step to help meet those needs of our veterans. Thank you.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge the presentation regarding the dementia or memory care, memory loss units. I've worked in both settings where we've had a unit that did not have ample space and then with a unit that did, and it makes a world of difference in the quality of life for the residents that you serve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I've got one more individual who'd like to make a comment, if that's all right.
Please.
All right.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I live at 2674 McCubbin in Roseville, Minnesota. I'm here in two capacities. I'm the vice chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, which is of over 40 different veterans organizations representing 425,000 of the veterans in the state of Minnesota. So, significant amount of people. And I'm also the president of the Vietnam Veterans of America. I just wanted to say how much we support what Steve and his organization has been doing. I've went to many of these homes, and I appreciate the problems we have with money and stuff here, but we have a motto that never again will a generation of veterans not keep supporting the next generation of veterans coming up. And we are going to have more veterans coming in there with the Iraq and the Gulf War. And Vietnam veterans, we're all getting old now. And the World War II gentlemen and ladies, we need to support all those people. I just wanted to tell you that we really do support and thank you for all the efforts that you do. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify? Mr. Musser, just a couple of things, make sure that I'm understanding. In the case of both Laverne and Fergus Falls, we're talking about the Alzheimer's units. And if I understood the testimony, we do have people that we are serving in both of those facilities who do have Alzheimer's. So this would just sort of enhance, I think, the control and those kinds of things. But first of all, are we serving people with dementia and Alzheimer's in those facilities today?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. We are.
Okay, thank you. And then, Mr. Musser, maybe just sort of a strategic question. I think maybe some of the testifiers hinted at this, but in our long-term care task force work, at least in the broader market, we saw that we may be overbuilt in nursing homes looking longer range and are trying to find ways for people to age in community, alternatives, and those kinds of things. Where do you see that in relationship to the veterans that you serve in the veterans' homes, nursing homes?
Mr. Chairman, as we talked about when you were visiting us, we have a significant waiting list for care at all of our facilities. Minneapolis, for example, has now it's exceeding 500 on their waiting list for all their programs, which include their skilled beds and their domiciliary beds and our homeless dual diagnosis program. John Skillingstad talked about his waiting list of anywhere from 50 to 80, and I think
Laverne, we're finding, is starting to have a growing waiting list of anywhere from 40 to 60. And that could say, all right, should you build more beds? And I think that's that perhaps is one solution, but I think our approach at this point in time is to do two things. One is to really provide a better therapeutic environment for Alzheimer's patients, and that tends to be a very important goal of our board. Secondly, we're looking at where it's appropriate developing more continuums of care at our facilities. We just completed a study at our Minneapolis facility and developed a master plan where, in fact, we do just what you're talking about. We develop an aging-in-place model, which includes adult daycare, assisted living, and the use of skilled beds. And we think that's the right approach. We're looking for alternatives to inpatient care rather than building more skilled nursing beds, unless it's appropriate, as with our Alzheimer's population. And so what we're looking at doing is trying to first see whether or not by providing these alternatives, such as adult daycare, whether that'll have a positive impact on our waiting lists and provide the services that we can and keep people at home longer, looking at modifying our domiciliary beds to be more like assisted living and provide that at a lesser cost. And I think that's the direction, at least today, that our board is going.
And one more question that I have, Mr. Musser. As I look at some of these things, are sort of the project integrity means sort of it's an entire project or not. But in things like Silver Bay, you have a granularity. There are some sub-projects within it. And I guess maybe it would be helpful to identify as a follow-up if there are, I know you've done some prioritization in the rankings of these that you submitted to the governor for possible consideration. What I'm wondering about is, are there any sort of sub-projects within it that are very critical? For example, I notice you have in Silver Bay, correct fire marshal citation, improved safety. If I'm identifying, maybe if off the top of your head, if you have anything, or if you could follow up with us to identify anything sort of within a lower priority project that might be higher because of its own specific nature. Is there anything like that, Mr. Musser?
Mr. Chairman, I think when we look at projects like Laverne and Fergus Falls, really is all or nothing. I think when we look at Silver Bay, there may be some opportunities to look at not doing things like adult daycare and child daycare. I think those things obviously are open for discussion. When we look at a project like the dining room kitchen at Minneapolis, obviously it's a very old facility. If we had to make some choices, we would want to do the kitchen first in the serving area, and hopefully we won't have to make those choices. But I think of all our projects, those would be the only two that we could possibly look at modifying if need be.
Mr. Musser, I think the dining kitchen one is sort of separately aligned already, if I'm not mistaken. Is that what you're talking about?
It's really being proposed as one project, but I think it does have two components
to it. Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. Good point. Well, at any rate, if you can follow up with any advice you might have on that, just so if we treat things properly and if there are some sub-projects in it that ought to be considered in a different priority level, just let us know.
Mr. Chairman, we'll do that.
Musser? Anything further on your part?
Sir?
Do you have any concluding remarks that you'd like to make?
Mr. Chairman, I think the committee needs to know that that our board has been very involved in discussing these projects. Certainly, they've taken this all very seriously. We have consulted with, as you've heard, with all of our service organizations, and not only do we have support of the folks that that testified here today, but also the state's commander's task force, which represents all of the state commanders of the chartered organizations in the state. We do see a very significant demand for service. I think we're trying to meet that demand reasonably and really focus on where some of the special care needs to be provided. And I think finally, I think it's important that we look for other ways of funding these projects, and I think we've done that. If the state added $6.5 million to our bonding request, we can leverage $12.2 million in federal funds. And I also think we have the opportunity to do more as we look at possibly some of the projects that we've already completed that we've learned that we might be able to go back and recapture some dollars. So I think we're trying to be responsible in that way and look for alternatives as well. But we do appreciate your time, and not only the time today, but the time that you've spent with coming out to the facility and learning more about us.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Musser. I think you and your board are controlling assets that are very important assets, both from the services you provide as well as, in some cases, the historical significance of the buildings that you deal with, and I appreciate it. I also want to acknowledge Representative Norris and Representative Magnus for carrying the bill, and I think there were additional authors that were on the bill. I think there certainly is a mood amongst legislators very much supportive. And to the veterans organizations that came here this morning, thank you very much for expressing your support as well. And I know the committee in its entirety is very appreciative of the services that you've given to your country. Thank you, Mr. Musser. Thank you. I think our next bill is House File 2112. I think we will proceed. I was going to suggest that maybe we alter, but we're pretty well on schedule, so I think we'll stick with our order. Senator Powell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To begin things, I'll move House File 2112 for possible consideration. Representative Powell, did you have any amendments or anything for that bill?
No, sir, I don't.
And please proceed.
Thank you. Hennepin County Medical Center is an acute psychiatric services center, serves those in emotional crisis with 24-hour, 7-day-a-week crisis counseling, assessment, and referral. More than 42,000 calls and drop-in visits each year are handled by the acute psychiatric services staff of psychiatrists, social workers, and psychiatric nurses. The center is supported by Hennepin County funds and state grants. They provide these services to any person in need. Mr. Chairman and committee members, as one of the preeminent public hospitals in the Upper Midwest, Hennepin County Medical Center offers many unique services that are of vital public health importance. The Acute Psychiatric Services Center is an indispensable safety valve in the statewide delivery of mental health services. It is frequently used by a wide variety of public health and public safety agencies when they are confronted with those in acute mental health crises. Without this resource, clients would be delivered to our various hospital emergency departments or, in the worst case scenario, our jails. Today, the center finds itself in a crisis. And to describe the problem and the proposed solution, we have with us today Commissioner Penny Steele of the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners, and we also have some other, Joanne Hall, Clinical Administrator of the hospital, and Dr. Cologne and Dr. Andrews, who are both staff psychiatrists at Hennepin County Medical Center. Thank you.
Commissioner Steele, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman Bradley and members of the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Thank you for allowing us to speak to you this morning. My name is Penny Steele, and I represent the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners 7th District. I thank you for this time to briefly testify in support of our request for the state of Minnesota to share in the costs necessary to expand and renovate HCMC's acute psychiatric services, formerly titled the Crisis Intervention Center. This acute mental health service commenced in 1972 and continues today as Minnesota's only public mental health crisis center that is open around the clock 365 days a year. This clinical service is fully staffed by only licensed mental health professionals, psychiatrists, registered nurses, clinical nurse specialists, and social workers. The program treats patients from 39 different Minnesota counties and is increasing by 10 to 15% with each passing year. And I might add as a footnote, I don't think anybody's trying to take our business from us in addressing this need. In 2002, over 12,000 clients, including 503 children and 70,000 phone calls, were experienced by this acute mental health service. I stand before you and hope that you will recognize the importance of this statewide resource and share in the cost of its expansion and renovation. The total capital cost of this project is estimated at $2.8 million. Hennepin County proposes the state of Minnesota partner with us by assuming 50% of this project's capital cost, which is $1.4 million. Hennepin County commits to matching that number as well as continuing our sole responsibility for all staffing, operations, and equipment. I assure you that the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners considers this investment in acute mental health services an imperative expenditure. We know in many cases this mental health treatment prevents individuals from potentially harming themselves, their family, and friends. We also know this emergency service ensures greater personal safety to the public at large. In closing, I urge the committee to share Hennepin's concerns, recognize the statewide importance of this acute accessible mental health treatment program, and that you will partner with Hennepin County in preserving this vital Minnesota public service. And I'd add just my own little footnote. The urgency of adding to this facility is it is just very, 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 very crowded, and it is beyond capacity, and we really are in quite desperate need of doing something to expand that. So I really do thank you for your time and appreciate the opportunity to sit before you.
Thank you for your testimony. No questions? Let's proceed. Please welcome the committee if you'd introduce yourself, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Joanne Hall, and I'm the administrator for the behavioral services at Hennepin County Medical Center. I'm also an RN by professional background. I'd just like to say the Crisis Center, now named Acute Psychiatric Services, has been in service to our community since 1972, and we really do take all comers. And I won't repeat some of the statistics you've already heard, but in this packet you'll see the list of the counties from where patients that have ended up in our Crisis Center have ended up. It's a fairly broad and an expansive number of counties. We are seen as a resource to many, especially for the most acutely ill, that can include violence. We see the psychopathology increasing and the demand increasing for this. And anecdotally, just last week, we ended up calling the police departments. 58% of our patients are self-referrals, but 31% are law enforcement. And we were so overcrowded. We had 15 people waiting. We were overflowing into our ED. We had 7 people in our locked area when only 5 are what should be there. And within those locked unit of adults, we had an 11-year-old. We are continually having children that there's absolutely nowhere else for our community to take them, and they end up in our facility. That's part of this request, is to restructure so we have a better environment to hold these children who are in acute need that our schools are unable to handle, which is usually where they come from, the schools, and till we can find the right resources for them. When we called the police to say we are overflowing, please do not bring any more here. It's at the point of, we're at the breaking point. They said, oh my God, what are we going to do in the meantime? It's crazy out here. And we do call from, we get calls from all over in relation to this. This is just not the Minneapolis Police Department. But we do work with all community peoples in relation to this. We accept all from the metro hospitals, private practitioners when they have nowhere else to send their patients, new people who move in, even if they have insurance. One of the key services we provide is same-day access for medication management. Without that, people would get iller, and it's a 90-day wait for their psychiatric appointment. we had wanted to see if we couldn't get some of the police officers from the different communities to come to speak to you, but with the notice, their schedules didn't allow. Sergeant Smith from Plymouth, however, asked me to communicate to you how important they see us as a resource, and that if we weren't there, they absolutely do not know where they would take some of the people that are out there that need help, and there's nowhere else to take them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Lopez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that you get folks from many other counties. Mm-hmm. How is it that they end up? I'm from St. Cloud, and you've identified Stearns and Sherburne County. How is it that they end up down at HCMC? Is it they happen to be in Minneapolis at the time and something goes wrong, or is something, some sort of a transfer going on from our communities to
without a doubt, when I was talking about being closed, just so you know, several times in these past couple weeks, all psych beds in all hospitals have been full. So do we get calls from other facilities asking us to take? Yeah. We personally usually cannot take them. We usually can help them find a bed in the metro area. Sometimes the clients end up down here for whatever reasons. Other times we've had counties call us and ask us because of the acute severity of the patient, would we please take them, especially in relation to forensics. So it can come from the client. It can come from agencies, county agencies, police, or just in trying to find beds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I have a list of some additional people that, I'm sorry, here we have. We have here. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Okay. Chairman Bradley and members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing us a few minutes of your crowded agenda to share some of our thoughts about what I think is a very important project. I speak to you on behalf of myself as well as Dr. Michael Popkin, chief of my department. My name is Eduardo Colon.
Vice, if you would introduce yourself.
I'm Eduardo Colon. I'm vice chief of the Department of Psychiatry at Hennepin County Medical Center, and I'm here on my behalf as well as that of my chief. You have before you numbers and figures about the number of visits, and I think the numbers underscore the need for expansion of services. Some of you have had the opportunity to tour our services and see how crowded and busy it can be. What I would like to do in the next couple of minutes is to share with you some of my thoughts to hopefully give you a better sense for who comes to the crisis center and why, although I certainly cannot cover all instances. I will talk about circumstances, not about specific patients for obvious reasons. And I'm accompanied by Dr. Janet Andrews, who's the medical director of the Crisis Center Acute Psychiatric Services. I think there's a number of very high acuity situations that you've heard alluded to. We may have to evaluate and treat the disruptive person who was taken off the plane at the airport, the person who became agitated in the middle of the airport or the Mall of America, who was brought in by police officers for assessment or intervention because of concerns for the person or for the public safety. We might have someone, a middle-aged person from the suburbs, who the news media has carried because they have barricaded themselves in their house with their spouse and children, threatened to take their life or that of those around them. We may see the man or woman who drove their car into the bridge, over the bridge, or into a wall and happened to luckily have survived and is in need of acute evaluation and intervention. Or somebody who's been brought to an emergency room from different areas or different hospitals because of having attempted to take their lives with carbon monoxide. We have a hyperbaric chamber, so it draws from a number of other counties and hospitals, or because of an ingestion of multiple medications, which can be handled in a community hospital. And if they're medically stable, we get to see them. But not all the patients that we see are necessarily this acute or this dramatic, but we do see people like this, clients like this on a daily basis. We may see a young man with chronic schizophrenia who has been off their medications for 6 to 8 months and unfortunately begins to decompensate, feel uncomfortable, hear voices, become scared, and might bring himself or herself to our unit or be brought in by concerned family members and not necessarily by police officers. Or the young woman who's been going from emergency room to emergency room because of chest pain, shortness of breath, and keeps being told that there's nothing wrong with her. It's just simple anxiety and cannot get in to see a psychiatrist for 3 months. But lastly, as Joanne underscored, maybe a 10-year-old with an IQ of 130 who is getting C's and D's in school is not sleeping, is losing weight, is profoundly depressed at that young age, and talking to their counselors about suicide and brought into our services because the school doesn't know what else they can do in terms of providing immediate care. Access to child psychiatrists in our community and throughout the state is very difficult. So it is my personal feeling that expanding the acute psychiatric services is not really an issue of cosmetics or an issue of comfort. It's really an absolute necessity for us to be able to continue to provide adequate, humane care in an efficient way for somebody who might be your constituent, maybe your relative, your friend, or an acquaintance who needs immediate access to the mental health system, which, as you know, is in quite a crisis at this point in terms of being able to be accessed. If it's all right, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn over the microphone to my colleague, Dr. Andrews.
Sure, it'll be fine. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Janet Andrews. I am the medical director of acute psychiatric services at Hennepin County Medical Center. And I come before you today really trying to stress the urgency of what we are dealing with. My colleagues have told you a great deal about what we are up against. I'd like to bring it into some... for you. On Thursday of last week, I walked into acute psychiatric services on a day when we had approximately 17 people waiting for immediate emergency assessment. We estimated 8 of which would need psychiatric beds. These individuals were unable at that point to make reasonable decisions for themselves and we're in a secured area. We end up housing people on mattresses on the floor, in the hallway. We have difficulty providing for their basic daily needs. For example, with the bed shortage, it is not uncommon for someone to remain in our facility for up to 48 hours. We do not have a shower facility the way we are set up at present, or access to immediate shower facilities. Imagine not taking a shower for 2 days. We need to have an individual go to the cafeteria and bring lunches down, hot meals for our patients that need to stay. We do not have a place for them to sit down and actually eat. They hold the plate on their lap. Often people end up sitting in chairs in hallways because we simply don't have beds to put them in. For individuals that come to us requesting medications, they simply can't get an appointment to see a psychiatrist. Yet, as I walked into the crisis center, I noticed one of the clinical nurse specialists being forced to interview a young lady in the hallway. Now, this young lady is having to reveal her personal history in a crowded area because there were no rooms available for privacy. They were all full with people waiting for beds. I believe our patients deserve better, and they need care and comfort, not to be exposed to lack of privacy. EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment Act and Active Labor Act, dictates that all patients that are transferred to outside hospitals need to have physical assessment. At present, we do not have room for a physical exam room. So patients need to have this assessment wherever it is that they happen to be at the moment. Fortunately, some of our rooms allow for some privacy. But imagine yourself having to go through a brief physical exam with only minimal amounts of privacy. I want to thank you for your time this morning and your consideration. I hope that you will take these things into account. One last thing before I leave, I do want to talk briefly about the children. We see about 500 children a year, and it is difficult to have a six-year-old who is being exposed to someone's, an adult's, psychotic break. It's frightening for a six-year-old. We can protect them physically by one-to-one supervision, but we can't block their ears from what they may hear coming from the next room or from the hallway out in front of their room. So I want to impart to you how desperate and how urgent I feel this really is. And I thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Ann. We're a little short on time, but just a quick question. You have, or there is in our packet, a kind of a layout design. However, it just looks like potential area. Is there a specific design to the areas that would be retrofitting for this project?
Yes. Do you have... Yes, Mr.
Sorry, wrong, asking the wrong person. Huh?
Yes, we have gone through the preliminary planning stages where we did our planning department worked with us to look at the demand, lay at the volume and the clinical needs, and project that into square footage. So, yes, we have the beginning. We would have to finalize the planning.
Okay. Thank you. Any additional testimony? I think there's another person, too, that had requested ahead of time, but if you have any additional testifiers, Representative Powell?
Apparently there is one more on the on your agenda. I just wanted to bring up one more point and have Ms. Hall verify this. One of the urgencies here is that the Joint Commission for Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations has cited this facility for being inadequate, and because of the situations that were described here today by the physicians and by the other testifiers. So that does give a matter of urgency to this. And if this facility was to lose its accreditation and close down, it would be a mess for everybody else. And, as Commissioner Steele said before, they aren't in competition for these patients. It ends up that in many cases, this is where these folks end up because there really is no other place for them to go. In an acute situation. So I just wanted to make that point, and then perhaps Ms. Hall would like to comment on that.
Ms. Hall?
Yes, we did receive a type 1 from the JCHO on our last visit, and we presented a corrective action plan, which was part of the planning process for looking at how we could expand the physical space and the services needed, because part of the reason this happened is people have to wait so long to get admitted for their beds, and so we had to broaden the services we need to provide. And we are really doing this for the metro and state many times because people get services outside of our hospital in relation to the admissions that go from our crisis center. And I work with the West Metro Group, and they very clearly communicated to me. The West Metro Group is a group of mental health providers who are working together to see how we can more efficiently provide services and streamline mental health services. It includes the plans, the hospitals, and the state. And in discussing this with them, they all reiterated how important a resource it was from their eyes to have continued services in our CIC.
Thank you. Well, I think we need to move on to try to wrap up here, Representative Paul. So I think, is there anybody else? Nancy Schumacher? Okay. Ms. Schumacher? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Again, my name is Nancy Schumacher. I'm with the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. Our organization investigates and exposes abuses in the mental health field. And in that capacity, we interview a lot of people. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that are complaining about abuses have been through the crisis intervention system at Hennepin County Medical Center. I'm not going to go into great detail about the abuses, but there are three basic ones that I feel need to be addressed before there's an expansion of the facilities there. Probably the greatest one is the use of neuroleptic medications on people who aren't displaying the behavior that would necessarily indicate that those neuroleptics should be used on them. We filed a couple of complaints with the Office of Health Facility Complaints of the Department of Health regarding this, and there is still one complaint that has not been acted upon. We actually document the abuses that we file and can tell from the charts that the behavior that's supposed to be displayed in order to use neuroleptics on a person aren't being displayed in several cases. The second concern we have is that 72-hour holds, part of the civil commitment statutes. Again, there's specific behaviors that are supposed to evidence dangerousness to the person or others. And we're finding that people are being placed on holds that don't actually display those types of behaviors, or they're not documented in the charts if in fact they are. So you know, I can empathize with the city of Minneapolis, the Hennepin County. I know that life is rough out there, and but just from our perspective, it's felt that these basic human rights and civil rights issues should be addressed before there is an expansion at the facility. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. You know, Representative Huntley?
My comments, I think, are all addressed to the earlier people that were here. And this is a major problem for the state. I mean, I think Hennepin County is the tip of the iceberg. Currently, we don't have enough beds, particularly for kids in the mental illness area. And there are times when kids are shipped to Duluth from the Twin Cities, or in one case, even had to put them in Winnipeg, because there were no beds in the state to accommodate these people. And something's got to be, this really is a statewide problem. And Hennepin County does get the brunt of it, I think. And somehow we're going to have to address this statewide, and I think this is a good start.
Thank you, Representative. I agree with you. The only thing that's not clear to me, this was a crisis even a few years ago. Then there were some metro area efforts trying to sort of coordinate resources, and there were some places placed. And I know there were various hospitals that had some ideas, and it's kind of been mixed around. I mean, it's sort of coming back now. One of the things that I want to do is sort of check around the community to see what the reactions are with other places that had different kinds of projects, but see how this fits in sort of the master plan. And I know there was a mental health action group or something like that that's had effort, and it'd be interesting to know if this project was ever talked about in that group. I mean, I guess what I'm looking for is how this particular piece fits in this major puzzle, which I think you're right, Representative Huntley, is a pretty acute problem. Representative Powell, do you have any insight? Does anybody else have any insight as far as this, how this might fit with the overall actions that have been going on?
I'm sure that I do have people here. Yes,
Ms. Hall?
I was on the mental health fiscal action team that was a subset of the mental health that was, I assume, Chairman, that you were referring to the one that was Commissioner Goodnow and the president of the Citizens League charged. And being a member of it, I did mention to those members that one of the things we were looking at is expanding our APS because of the huge demand, and if that was not the direction they saw that was needed, that they should let me know. And they said no. Did it make it to the level of general recommendations for that group? No. The group focused much more on policy issues and funding streams. And then the West Metro Group, which is like the East Metro Group from the St. Paul, where they worked on the metro areas coordinating all our efforts. I'm on that also, and that's what I referred to also, where I brought up the issue of that. And we have very specifically talked about the children's services that are needed and how to better coordinate those. And Nowhere else is it identified when you have children that are so out of control, there's nowhere else to take other than juvenile detention center. No other hospital or facility has expressed an interest to pursue having that type of service available.
Yeah. No, I'm aware of not too many people clamoring to get into this business, unfortunately. Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you, Representative Powell, and the Chair will lay over House File 2112 for possible future consideration. Representative Junkie. Chair will move House File 2315 for consideration. Representative Junkie, welcome to the committee. We have no traditions like other committees, but you could have started it. I mean, goodies would have been just fine.
I realize that now, Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie, welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. And if you wouldn't mind, just to finish up on your last bill, if I could add some testimony, too, because I agree with what I heard with that last. This is a serious problem, the crisis beds. And I can attest that people in our area, too, we send people after 10 or 12 calls from our police department. We might end up in Duluth or Sioux Falls or any number of places. We talk about the hospitals doing it. Wilmer is in the process of putting up a $55 million hospital expansion. And they asked, they have looked at putting in these crisis beds, but they cannot get the reimbursement rates from the state that would pay for the beds and support them. So it's a difficult issue that way. And I will add my concern also, which Representative Nornes and Abler and Walls and Howes and Swenson, and I can go on, regional treatment center people. Again, I think we need to keep an eye on our human services folks and ask them what they're doing to address it, because we are emptying out these hospitals, trying to move to a community-based services, but yet we're also abandoning the crisis beds that we have out there now. And I don't know how we're going to handle those in the future, and I don't think it's real clear from state-operated services what their plan is at this time either. So I would just ask the committee to really keep this issue in mind, because it's serious, and it's growing, and we need to address it. With that, Mr. Chair, what I have here is a bill that was introduced that literally is a work in progress. Getting back to the regional treatment centers and the representatives I mentioned that have them in their districts, as they move out of these centers and into community base, what they're doing is, of course, is leaving many times great buildings out there that we need to find a use for. We have had a reuse task force going out in the Wilmer area for the last year or year and a half, and they're identifying uses for that facility in conjunction with department administration, state-operated services, and then other groups. They are in the process of putting together right now a request for proposal, which will go out in the next month probably, hopefully to be back and decisions made on that in the next 6 months. But what we're trying to do is identify some of the things that there is a need for, and to first, before that request for proposal goes out and comes back with maybe private developers for the bare land and other things out there, to identify government uses. Again, to look forward. You're going to see Representative Heigerken up here in a bit. And I think what we want to do is avoid something like that happened up in Sauk Center that he will talk about, which we actually sold a facility. And now we're talking about trying to get it back to utilize, because now we have future needs with these buildings. Wilmer facility is in very good condition. We're trying to look beyond the end of our nose and anticipate the future needs. So along with Mr. Musser and the Veterans Home Board, they've been out there numerous times. They've conducted the census. They've done their the steps they do to determine needs of their population. And indeed, a veterans nursing facility is a growing need in our area, I believe. And I don't have it. I'm shooting from the hip here. But I believe there's like 12,000 veterans within a 50-mile radius of Wilmer. and we know they're aging just like everyone in rural Minnesota. So what this does is lays out the cost that it would take one of the buildings out there that would be particularly difficult to find someone to drop in and use would be the hospital building, and the Veterans Home Board has expressed an interest in that. The medical treatment center, 60 beds would be able to be up and utilized there. But we're also looking at buildings which we have already remodeled. Every taxpayer in the state has put money into these buildings, and they're sitting there ready to go. Basically, Cottage 14 is one of those such buildings. And what the Veterans Home Board is looking at there is developing a geriatric behavioral program, again, to address a unique population of veterans with MI problems, which isn't really being addressed anywhere in the state right now. And, in fact, in the upper Midwest, we may eventually develop and draw from a large area for that population of veterans. I will just mention briefly the money, obviously, is here. Whether that's ready to go or not this year, I don't know, but we're putting it out there for you, Mr. Chair. It may end up that we are looking for just pre-design money at this point. We've had, actually, with the request for proposals coming in August, September type time frame, we have had a commitment from the governor and Department of Administration that if we need to do a supplemental bonding bill next year in the off year, that we would do that to address some of these things, depending on how that RFP comes in and the use of those buildings. So, but again, I think it behooves us to think ahead, whether it's mental health beds, whether it's veterans, whether it's DWI felony offenders that we may want to treat, whether it's any number of other uses. What does the state need? And Representative Nornes Abler and others have been busy trying to wrestle with that, as I have. And I think there are needs for these facilities and these buildings, and it behooves us to do some forward thinking. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie, I think you alluded to this, but having sort of read through this, I have the sense that these are kind of preliminary estimates. This is not based on any architectural work or anything like that. So it is kind of a prime target for planning in normal care.
Mr. Chair, it is fairly preliminary. I don't think there's been any architectural work done. Mr. Musser can answer that. But they have made numerous visits out there and done their calculations based on what they've seen in the past. And he can maybe explain where those numbers came.
Musser, you have comment to that?
Mr. Chairman, Steve Musser from the Veterans Homes Board. These are preliminary numbers. We looked at the buildings, you know, for example, in the hospital building, window heights don't meet skilled care needs, and so we as part of the cost estimate for that, we looked at the kinds of bathroom arrangements that need to be changed, and these are some ballpark numbers. They are based on you know, folks in the industry who do these kinds of things, but again, they are pretty general. We would need to have a pre-design done for this to really come up with a solid figure.
Fair enough. Thank you. One other question, Representative Junkie. I'm familiar that there is an RFP process working. Can you give us kind of an update? I'm assuming that maybe even other options are being explored, and what's the status of that?
Right. Basically, Mr. Chair, what you have in Wilmer, just to remind people, is a campus with six empty buildings right now. It does have the adult MI programs out there, which they are trying to relocate to community-based. There's also adolescent CD and MI care and some other enterprise programs which will not be leaving the campus. They will stay and become part of a new campus. We have a juvenile lockup facility, multi-county lockup that will stay. But what the department is doing, similar to what they did in Fergus Falls, and certainly Representative Nornes can testify whether that's working or not and the progress they're making, but they are going to put out a nationwide RFP for any unused buildings. Probably, though, there's also some prime land out there along the Wilmer Bypass, four-lane highway, as well as next to the golf course across the road from the Regional Treatment Center. We suspect the RFP will come in, you know, with a lot of ideas for that bare land and development. But we're also then looking for ideas for the rest of the buildings, and whether it's someone that could, we don't believe we'll find someone to plop down on the whole campus, but they do want the whole RFP process to be done by August, September with a plan for the entire area. And this would be part of it. We've talked to the Minnesota Home Board or whatever they're called, the Governor's Initiative for the Homeless. There's an interest in some of those units out there with that initiative, because we do have a homeless problem too. But again, the RFP process, Mr. Chair, should be done mid-summer to late summer. And then at that time, we hope to, you know, announce to the community what we're going to use this facility for.
And then the final question from me, Representative Junkie, the governor did have a recommendation on system-wide campus redevelopment, reuse, and so forth. And it appeared as though it was sort of tied into the this process. So is there a possibility we may have some overlap here in what those monies might be available for and your recommendation?
And again, I'm not familiar directly with those monies, other than I know part of those were for the RFP process, and perhaps some are, like you say, you're right, he's setting money aside once the RFP comes in, when we have to remodel or do window heights or whatever for people, we could assist in that then. And obviously, administration wants to get this campus off their books. Our city and county are also discussing a purchase of it with leasing to all these various entities. So it's a work in progress, but it's working so far. We actually are meeting monthly, Mr. Chair, and I can certainly update your committee administrator and your committee on progress that's being made, so you know too as we move forward. We have monthly meetings with all these entities for updates. So. Sure.
Representative Abler.
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair. The department was here a few weeks ago and told us that they were working with communities and trying to find ways to use these facilities, and I think this is an example of how to go about that. I think we're on the right track.
And Mr. Chair, also, if you remember the legislation from last year, the department does have to come back to you and explain the reuse to you and explain where the programs that were there now are being relocated and explain how they are handling our crisis beds and everything else before they can move forward. So I assume once the RFP is in place, that will happen early next session, where they'll be back before you to get your approval on it, because they can't move forward without legislative approval either.
That's my understanding, Representative Junkie. I see no further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for doing. Chair will lay over House File 2315 for possible future consideration. Representative Heiger.
Mr. Chair, I'll move this bill.
We don't have a bill in front of us.
Oh, I'll move the non. I won't move the bill then.
I'll explain to members. We have the language, but we don't have a formal bill. Since we're really, this is for information purposes, we made kind of a decision last night because we're coming to the end of our hearings, and then we're going to have to proceed to the next step. And I thought it was fair to have this project proposal in front of us. So although there's no bill, consider that our discussion today will put the project anyway in the purview of this committee for our consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please proceed.
Representative Bud Heitkirchen, and thank you, fellow members. I do not have a bill number on it. The only thing I have is a bill draft number, so I'll move that to 04, bill draft number 045378 be considered for bonding request.
Yeah, you don't need to make any motion.
Just to give you a little bit, you've got a packet that I did get around last night, and I think it's in a folder that you all should have in front of you.
Yeah, Representative Heidrich, I think you win the prize.
Okay, thank you. I did do my work last night, so I did get something up for you to look at. And it's something that we've been looking at for some time. Last summer we worked on this project, and last fall. In the packet that you have is the building layouts, and there's 21 buildings there, and 18 are in real good condition. There's notation on the buildings that are most suitable for use. It does include the history of the buildings as well as the history of the facility out there. The Sox Center is the location, and Sox Center is better known as the Main Street of the World because of Sinclair Lewis's novel, Main Street. It's 45 miles from St. Cloud, which is very important, being that there's another VA about an hour away. Previously, it was a correctional facility for the youth. It was zoned and run by the state up through 99, and in 2001, The city bought it, and in 2002, an individual bought it. Monies were spent previously in the last 10 years. There were just, for example, $1 million spent on the Morris Hall, $1 million spent on the Sullivan Hall. There's been a lot of monies pumped into those buildings. Representative Otremba is very familiar with them. It's been very, very close to her district. In fact, it's, I think it's probably about 10 miles from out of your district, I think. But anyways, the proposal is for a multi-use veterans facility. There are 70 rooms there. There are actually more than that. There's room for 200 beds. Meets all of the health department codes. It's available for state, and it could be up and running in very little time. It's EDHA approved. Very low alterations needed to the buildings. It has a full kitchen and stainless steel, a kitchen I wish my restaurant Charlie's Cafe would have. But going over, the SOC Center is very much on board with me. And a letter dated from the mayor of SOC Center, December 16, 2003. I'll just read a couple paragraphs of it. As you know, staff has been working with Mr. Jim Joust, the current owner of the former Minnesota Correctional Facility, to ascertain the need, potential benefits of working together to develop the campus of the facility as a multi-use facility focused on the needs of veterans. Now, having a broad base of information to draw from, the City Council administration and I were brought up to speed on the various elements of what is being proposed. The result was unanimous action to join Planning, Policy, and the Operations Committee to support Mr. Jowles' efforts to promote the redevelopment of the campus as a multi-use veterans facility. It is our understanding that Mr. Jowles will be pursuing uses for the structures on the campus to meet a variety of needs for veterans, to include assisted living, nursing home care, house for at-risk veterans training, retraining, and various other special needs. Not only would it be a privilege to be the home of the proposed veterans facility, this redevelopment effort could have a significant impact on SOC Center, recovering from the loss of the correctional facility when the state shut it down in 1999 and approximately 100 jobs are lost. Sincerely, Mayor Paul Tyson. I have been in contact, and so has the City of SOC Center, with various members of the Department's Board of Veteran Affairs. We have talked to Mike Puglisi, Dr. Randy Petzl. We have talked to Steve over here, Muser, we've been in contact with them. And some of the things that did come to light were it's something that's coming to the board a little bit late. There's some good things about it. It's a facility with 154 acres. The buildings are in very good condition. It's just a beautiful campus. If you've ever been out there, Tom Mullen, that has been on the board, could speak for it, and he's been very impressed with it. I know Wilmer's interested in getting a facility. We have some advantages of being on the I-94 corridor and the proximity to us in a fast-growing area. I've also been in contact with one Kathleen Harrison from the VA Midwest Center planner, and she has mentioned that it was still a possibility to get on board. I know they're making some considerations for 2004. And I understand that the funding is a 50-50 state federal, and of the state's money, 50% of it, the state comes up with 50%. I think the VA comes up with 23, the patients come up with 27. But these are all things that have come to the board, and Mr. Jowles' vision is to sell the facility back to the state for providing living facilities and medical services to veterans. The SOC Center property, as you have in front of you there, has 18 buildings in good repair and could be easily converted to serve this purpose. It could be done at the fraction of the cost of building a new facility or significantly expanding existing facilities. Some of the services that this facility could potentially serve are short-term and long-term placements for assisted living, long-term care, medical clinic, dormitories for patients who need to stay overnight, job training services, transitional housing. The campus has space to add housing as well. According to many, there is a need for such a facility, a potential to create 200 jobs in a rural community. There's already widespread support for this project in the community of SOC Center. The location is only a few blocks from the SOC Center Hospital, 1 mile from the interstate and 45 minutes from the Veterans Administration Hospital in St. Cloud. Making use of the SOC Center facility can be done at a fraction of the cost of building new or adding on to other existing facilities, saving the taxpayers money. According to Jim Cole, the Minnesota Assistant Counsel for Veterans, the VA does not get involved in this kind of project unless there's a VA hospital in close proximity. The existence of the VA hospital in St. Cloud, again, is a plus. In your packet there, and I'm going to be very short, as I told Chair Bradley last night, it explains pretty much all of the buildings out there, and it has the layout of how everything looks, and I actually have some pictures of it, but I didn't take them along. I think you probably have enough information in front of you. On page 9, I'm just going to read one paragraph in closing. At the second last paragraph on that page, it talks about each of the buildings on the campus is described as either contributing or non-contributing. The last paragraph says, the subject property is further described as significant as it represents the cottage theory of the state institutional design, as well as the work of Clarence H. Johnson, a prolific St. Paul architect in the first 30 years of the 20th century. The buildings of the home school were constructed according to the cottage system of institutional care, which is a design theory used by many state hospitals and many asylums in the late 19th century. The system called for the institution to be built away from the populace in a rural area to create a private, tranquil atmosphere, with farm operations often becoming an integral part of the property. So when you see some of the property listed there, you'll see some wood cellars and a barn, et cetera, and it was used by the youth. And there are other facilities that there's one of the rooms that was one of the buildings used as a classroom. There's another one that has a gymnasium. It's just a beautiful facility. And I thought I'd just bring it aboard as a possibility. Thank you for your time.
President Heikkinen, first of all, if I'm reading this right, this recommendation is for purchase.
Right.
This wouldn't have anything to do with whatever capital improvements might be necessary to bring
no,
the buildings.
No, it would be the proposal is for basically asking for $1 million.
And Representative Heikkinen, is there any sort of a sense of if it was purchased in ballpark of what it would take to achieve the uses that you're suggesting?
Okay, I talked to Jim Jouse on it, and he thought that with the City of Sauk Center, they would get it up to code in no time at all.
Any questions, members? I would just sort of comment that the status it is, of course, I guess this is purchase. I mean, that I don't know if there's a value in some kind of planning money or anything like that, but I think we ought to be open for options here.
Thank you very much for your time.
And, Mr. Heikkinen, you said something about 200. I don't remember if that was 200 beds,
200, 200 beds.
Jobs.
200 beds.
Well, that's a nice jump.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for giving me the time.
We'll lay over,
it.
You bet. We'll lay this over for consideration, even though we don't have a bill. I think at least members have had a chance to see the recommendations. Members, in your book, the sections on these bills and the final one that we received should have been placed in your book, so you have that already. The plan from here, I've talked to some of my colleagues in other committees to sort of see what process people are using to try to prioritize it. It is our obligation to present to the Capital Investment Committee a listing of projects, and as I understand it, that we would be putting a ranking order on those in our recommendations. I believe we have one other alternative by statute to add to that, and that is that we can make what might be called a no recommendation, which would essentially say to the capital investment that this project should not be considered. That those are sort of our options. My suggestion to members, we don't have a long, long list of projects. Ours are a lot more simple than many of the committees are. Would be that if members have any thoughts, any recommendations as far as what you think might be priorities, that you get me that information. What I will try to do is to put together my best shot at a beginning point so that next Tuesday, and I would hope that I would have that ready for you Monday so that it's not just sprung on you as a surprise, but that it would be available then. Let's see, Tuesday. Yeah, we're okay yet. I was trying to remember if we're going to be gone, I think, but if that's Tuesday noon to Wednesday noon, if I remember right, so we're all right then. And the way I would proceed then is that we would open that for discussion, my beginning recommendation, and there would be open then for if people want to recommend or amend to move priorities around, that would certainly be. I'm trying to be efficient, but also fair at the same time. So, one, I would invite, if you have any suggestions to me, get those to me in the next couple of days here. And two, on next Tuesday, then we will have sort of the formal action, which then will result in forwarding our recommendations as a committee to the Committee on Capital Investment. Any questions, members? None. Just a reminder, on Thursday, our order of business will be a presentation from Senator Dernberger on the report that just came out yesterday afternoon. And I believe, Representative Bourgeau, tomorrow's business in policy is?
Well, thank you for asking, Mr. Chairman.
Tomorrow, I knew you wanted me to.
Tomorrow's business is all about nursing homes, and we have many, many nursing homes throughout the state. And if, by the way, if you still have anyone who wants to testify, tell them to call Andy Gilday, and we're going to hear from them until they're tired of talking.
And I think
the survey process.
Yeah, the survey process is the subject matter. No further business. We're adjourned.